Well, good morning and welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 24th of March. It is our roundtable panel. We are more than pleased to have you with us. A reminder, you can join us and join in on the discussion by simply writing to us, panel at wamc.org. We won't get to all the letters, but maybe we'll get to yours. We'd love to hear it. Look at it, see it. Judge for ourselves. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce the panel to you this morning before we get off and running on a busy news day. WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you? All right. We obviously are having difficulty. Okay. All right, so we'll wait on Alan. Alan is from a remote location. Apparently, the TV is on, but he is not. So we'll check that out. We have the associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, who I know is here because he's right across the table from me. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
And of course, Barbara Smith joins us each and every Friday, author, activist, and she joins us. And Barbara, it's a delight to have you here.
Thank you so much, Joe. Good morning.
Is the TV still on? Yeah, let's just hear it. We'll hear a little bit of the TV. Okay. All right. Very good.
There must be some big development. Some
that
big
he's
development.
Up on. That he's, sure. He's... Right. Well, you'll keep us. You can monitor the situation at the Casa de Shartok and find out when he's ready to go. Okay. Great.
He's ready.
Okay. Hey! There you go. We were just hearing the TV. We introduced you, and then we were hearing the TV, yeah. So we didn't know.
Well, maybe we should just play the TV. Well, but I was just checking in to find out if anything new had happened. No, Gunsmoke doesn't come on until 1 o'clock.
Yeah, so, there you go. Well, oh, jeez.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's I don't get that. I don't get why Roselle would be calling me when I was on the air. But what can I tell you? So all is well or not well this morning.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show. It's a delight to have you here. Okay.
Thank you. Little late.
Yeah. Let's get started and talk about what's going on in the world. Trump Donald Trump, the president of the United States, has delivered an ultimatum to House Republicans. Pass health care on Friday or he'll move on. So the question is, what will happen today? There's anywhere from, I have heard, Mike, you probably have a better sense of this than I do. I've heard that anywhere from 26 to 32 votes, right? Is that?
That's about the range. Yeah, 30-ish.
Yes. You know,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that they still need for this legislation to pass. So through his aides, the president signaled that the time for negotiations was over, and they got done with the meeting, and they said we're going to take a vote, and the defeat would mean that Obamacare would continue. And so, Alan, what do you think of this? Coming from the man who said that the reason that we should vote for him is because of his negotiation skills, I'm curious as to what you make of having a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and a Republican president not being able to get a deal done.
Well, his problem, number one, is with the so-called Freedom Caucus. These are the real right-wingers. And they are backed by the Koch brothers, who, for whatever reason, we've had a couple of letters saying, can we explain what the Koch position is on this? For whatever reason, they don't, this caucus keeps moving. They're a moving target. So they make demands. I mean, I was reading something in the Berkshire Eagle who had picked up a piece from the New York Times this morning. Okay, so listen to this one paragraph. At a White House meeting with members of the hardline conservative Freedom Caucus, he agreed to the conservatives' demands, get this, to strip federal health insurance requirements for basic benefits such as maternity care, emergency services, mental health and wellness visits from the bill. But that was not enough to placate the faction. Can you imagine? I mean, the ER, they can't go there. You're going to have a baby. You can't do that. Remembering, of course, that a lot of women, particularly white women in the United States, voted for Donald Trump. So now I have this theory going on just a little too long, I know, that Trump was seen in the beginning as a bully you did not want to cross. That was his deal. That's what he was saying. The problem was, he blinked. The problem was that when he got opposition for him, he didn't go further, which is what I was fearful of, you know, genuine sort of full-blown fascism. He didn't do that. And as a result, once you show that you can be contradicted, and he has been, you're in real trouble.
Mike, what do you make of it?
Well, let's clarify. He sent out a message last night that said, if you don't pass it today, if you don't vote on it today and pass it, we're moving on, and we're going to keep Obamacare, except that he's already issued executive orders that remove the mandate, the federal mandate that people have insurance and the penalties associated with that for businesses and the tax penalties for individuals. And they're not doing anything to repair some of the problems that Obamacare has had right out of the gate. I mean, that's the real problem. It could have been fixed in the last 7 years. It needed adjustments. Every big program will need adjustments, but they didn't do that. It's interesting, too, that surveys today show that I think 67% of Americans prefer Obamacare, and only 17% of Americans favor this American Health Care Act. Tom Price, who's the Secretary of Health and Human Services, today said, this is only part of the plan. And that's important to remember, too. If they do pass it today, if they somehow, you know, get enough votes, do enough bribes, you know, and throw some things at them. that's a cynical thing. You know, no. They make enough compromises that please the Freedom Caucus folks and they get it through. But they don't offend the moderates and the regular mainstream Republicans enough. And they do get it through. It's really just the beginning of a long process. And now, at least, if it gets defeated or it doesn't come up for a vote and they put it off the table for now, it will give Republicans an opportunity to kind of come up with a real plan, because this really isn't anything but window dressing. And I think
yes.
Trump,
and what?
Yeah.
I was going to say, Mike, and one of the reasons that I think Trump is willing to lay it aside now is he's looking at these polls also. Now, remember, their propaganda effort was Obamacare, it's terrible, it's terrible. Everybody's shrugging and say, okay, I guess it's terrible. But then when they began to see the particulars, it goes down to the high popularity for the program and the low popularity for what these guys are trying to do. So now he says, I don't know that I would be better off if they replace this program. So it's possible he gets it both ways. He gets to say, shame on you, you didn't do what we said we were going to do. But at the same time, he creates a sense that maybe Obamacare isn't that bad after all.
Barbara.
I think anybody who has their eyes open knows that he doesn't care about the American people whatsoever. So it's always about what's best for him. And I think Alan was indeed talking about that. But he, as I said, he just absolutely does not care what happens to actual human beings who live in this nation. And I would be delighted if it was defeated, because it would just be such, I think, for those of us who understand who and what this administration is, it would be a real sign that people's voices and people's advocacy and people's real concerns were going to not be under attack in the way that getting rid of Obamacare, the American Health Care Act, would affordable Health Care Act would have.
Ira Fussfeld on the program yesterday made the statement, which I have to agree with, and because I was thinking about it much of the day yesterday, is it puts you in a weird place where there are many who are rooting for this right wing of the Tea Party to succeed in the Koch brothers so this won't get passed.
Yeah, you got to remember the reason that the right wing, this Freedom Caucus of the Congress, is even considering it is because they're gutting out all those essential benefits that Alan mentioned before: pregnancy, pediatric care, emergency services, all that stuff, mental health, wellness first visits, stuff like that, newborn care. And by taking that out, that was a compromise to win over this. And that's offended the moderates and the regular mainstream Republicans enough. And the Democrats are against any change. So it's really... I mean, it's tragically sad that's the reason that it might pass today, because they've gutted it enough to make it worse.
And the question is, what's health care without those basic, you know, access to those basic services?
Well,
what is it?
In fairness, they say that then the states can come up with their own plans, Barbara, and everybody will be taken care of.
Yeah, I can see Mississippi and Louisiana and states.
I was going to say.
Yeah, I could just see that happening. Yeah,
I was going to name the same states. Right?
Oh, good.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I mean, this is. But what is so fascinating is, no matter what concessions they make to the Freedom Caucus, it's never good enough. And they keep saying, "Oh yeah, and a couple more things." And that's why Trump said, "We're through bargaining."
Well, I think you're right. I think he has blinked. And this is a major setback. Already they're complaining internally in the White House that they made this their first big effort, and that they should have put it on the side and let it let them get something a little more organized together and going after some other things like he wants to now, you know, like removing government limits on this and getting pipelines through, which he's announced today, and that kind of stuff.
And can you imagine if the so-called, and I want to put so-called because I get a lot of letters on this, the so-called moderates, John Faso, Lee Stefanik, your paper did a very interesting editorial, Mike, in which I thought I read that you were basically taking back your endorsement of Faso.
Essentially, it was a slam at Faso for, you know, promising to be, you know, to be open and having said that he would... not vote for this bill if it defunded Planned Parenthood, and then pulling this, joining Chris Collins, the Western New York congressman, in this charade where the federal government is going to come in and impose the way that New York funds Medicaid. I mean, even John Flanagan, the Senate Majority Leader, the Republican Senate Majority Leader in New York, is against that. I mean, New Yorkers are going to have to pay for Medicaid. It should be perhaps revised. The formula is faulty. Many have said that. But 26 states do that. I mean, it's just, the whole thing is pretty frustrating. And that was the thrust of the editorial.
Well, as you know, I keep citing my old congressman, long gone, Silvio Conti, a Republican, when we moved to the Berkshires. And Silvio Conti was beloved by Democrats and Republicans because he would just get up there and stick it to them. I mean, he really was very, very tough on the Republicans. So I think that John, and he certainly knows this, had he taken that position instead of defending the Trump care and looking for ways to defend himself, had he done that, he would have been much further along with his constituency right now. Right now, I would bet he's in real danger, real political danger.
There, sorry, Mike. John from Chatham just wrote us this note on this very topic, saying just an observation that John Faso is just another Republican hypocrite. His charge that Governor Cuomo needs to man up regarding the Republicans' absurd proposal to shift Medicaid costs to New York State is priceless. This from the same spineless congressman who won't even hold town hall meetings regarding the Affordable Care Act. Hopefully voters will be smart enough to limit his term in Congress. So I guess that would put it in your to bolster your argument, Alan, that he's in trouble.
Well, Joe, pardon me. He won because it's a little bit more Republican district than Democratic district. It's pretty even when you count, but it's a little bit more Republican. And Chris Gibson had been there, and he was there. Now I think what's happening is this whole thing has politicized a lot of the people who wanted to believe John Faso was Chris Gibson and who are sitting on the sidelines and who are now politicized. And that creates real danger for both Elise Stefanik up in that district, which has gone Democratic, and as well as Faso's district. If the Democrats don't commit suicide and get the wrong person to run again, then they have a good chance of winning.
Well, she's still listed as undecided or unclear in the New York Times tally.
Yep.
But she said some very nice things about
on the healthcare vote.
Yes, on the health care. But she said some very nice things about the American Health Care Act, and she's being urged. So it sounds
like a lot
like
of eye rolling.
I say, you want to bet?
Yeah.
You want to bet?
And yes,
she's between. Yeah, sorry, Bob.
I was going to say, just so the listeners know, there's a lot of eye rolling in response to that. She said some nice things about the American Health Care Act. Yeah, right.
Right, which sounds like she's going to support it, unless there's so many concessions to the Freedom Caucus that even she can't support it. But her spokesperson says that, you know, it's good because it'll lower premiums by 10% and reduce the deficit.
Yeah.
Barbara?
But the thing is that, real low premiums, no services. How does that work? It just makes no sense at all.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, really cheap insurance. You don't have to pay much for it, and you get virtually nothing for that low price you're
paying. But you have choice, Barbara, and you have access to health care. Have to pay for it if you want more.
Yeah, Mike, that is the word, access. I love it when they say access. You have access. If you had $1 million, you'd have access. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
access is the word.
There are 50... different types of toothpaste. You just have to get to Wisconsin to pick them out. Yeah, it's access. All right, we're going to take a break. We will be back in just a moment. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan, Mike, and Barbara are with us. We hope that you will be too. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be back after this. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. I'm Joe Donahue along with Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and Barbara Smith. Panel@WAMC.org is where you can write your letters. We get letters like this one from Bennett, who's asking when Rosemary's coming back. Well, Rosemary should be back next week. She's been away. She's been doing some traveling, and she will be back. And we will, she says she is, Bennett says, you are all so intelligent and articulate, but I miss her passionate Spitfire personality, not to mention the occasional bickering with the rest of you. Well, we can bicker, too.
Yeah, we can bicker. that's a stupid-looking shirt, Joe.
Thank you. Good morning.
But I think it should be.
Yes.
But I think it should be said, Joe, that Rosemary is our own person. She travels the world. She gives lectures all over the place. She is a prize person who comes into endangered countries and teaches how to do journalism right. But nobody at this place does anything but want Rosemary here. There's an occasional letter saying, I know what you guys are up to. It's just nonsense.
Yes. Well, we are waiting her return, and hopefully it'll be next week. So Lori says, good morning. Happy Friday, panel. It's all about plausible deniability regarding Trump's ultimatum. If the negotiation fails and ACA remains, Trump can claim it's not his fault. Carol says, boy, you guys are missed earlier in the week. Onward, Trump would love if the health care plan does not go to a vote today because he will get exactly what he wants, someone else to blame for the failure. So two very similar takes on that position. Let us go.
I don't agree with that. But I don't agree with that, by the way. I think it's possible he will come out a winner because it doesn't get rid of it protects health care rights. But I don't think that's what he's thinking. I think he needed a victory. I don't think he's got his victory. I think he's properly chastised. I don't think this is something he wants.
But again, you know, I made this statement at the beginning of the show I know saying that there were things that he said during the campaign that are turning out not to be true is a difficult thing to keep a list of. But again, it was the skill of negotiation, right? And Alan, I don't know. I want your opinion on this. Does it seem like he had a whole lot to do in the crafting of the bill? I mean, it seems like the House went to it. He said, okay, I'll back this for whatever it's worth, and went with it. Mm. But he really didn't do a whole lot as far as, like, this is my bill. This is what I want. This is what I feel is the best. He sort of, like, sort of adopted something that was written for him.
Which is why, Joe, there is this big debate on whether this should be called Trump care or Ryan care.
Yeah.
Because Ryan is the policy wonk. He knew what he wanted. Trump just wanted a victory. He didn't care what was in the bill. I'm sure of that. So you make a good point. On the other hand, the defeat is huge for him that he didn't get what he wanted, because believe me, if it had passed, he would take the credit for it.
Well, sure.
Yeah, I think he wants it to be called Ryan Care. Just for the record.
Yeah, but I mean, if you have somebody else do your write your final paper, then yeah, you still want an A. And if you don't get it, then you blame the other person, right?
Oh, Lord.
Well, no, Alan.
A little bit of a forced analogy. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry,
Mike. I completely agree. I think President Obama knew a lot of details, and he still got part of it wrong when he was out going across the country for a year selling Obamacare and got parts of it wrong. It's very complicated, as President Trump said a few weeks ago. You know, this health care is very complicated. You know, it is. And it's not really his bill, and he made a political and strategic mistake to throw his support behind it without really understanding what he was up against. And I think the best thing for him is for him to move on from his perspective, where he can do other things and maybe accomplish something.
Yes, he can do other things to damage the American populace. Yes, let's get going with that, please. He hasn't done enough already.
Make America great again, Barbara. Mm-hmm. Barbara S. Mark says, this may be a little premature if you don't talk about it today, but the Senate just passed a bill that will remove the restrictions on Internet providers to sell our information. As a result, Comcast, Verizon, et cetera, can sell our information, what we buy, where we go, all of it. A sad day for all of us when, after this obviously will pass the House, Trump signs it into law, and it reminds me of one of Maurice Hinchey's major concern, communication companies.
Yeah, I guess Google some of the other search engines have that information on us already, and Verizon and the other big telecoms wanted it too.
Go ahead, Alan.
No, I was just going to say this is a prized possession, political possession of the, you know, sort of semi-left that really felt very, very strongly about this. I think we got more mail, Joe, about this than just about anything else when it was passed. So the idea that it's going to be taken away by the right winger and his vassals is not entirely surprising.
Yeah, the next big thing from the FCC will be net neutrality, which keeps the playing field level on access to the Internet. And when they remove that, the big companies will have the superhighways and everybody else will have Central Avenue.
Martin writes, I'm struggling to understand Trump's political motivations in sacking Obamacare in favor of a plan that will remove coverage for many of his voters. Sure, he's always says he wants to do away with it. He also said that he wants universal coverage. It seems to me he could do well politically to simply reject the Ryan plan, claiming that it will hurt the lower middle class. Not that he really cares, but he could play the hero, which we know he loves.
Well, the issue, of course, is access. You know, who said it? Was it Barbara? I don't want to reward the wrong person. Was it Barbara who said it's all about access, or Mike? It is.
Mike,
they keep using the word access as if we're going to be fooled by that. If you have money, you will have access to a health care account in the bank. That's very funny. Or if you have money, you will have all kinds of other abilities to choose your doctor. It is a sick joke. It really is.
There's a report, I think CNN is reporting that the president is said to be agitated by the process, according to aides, which he thinks is all political. Okay.
Mm.
That's
Duh.
Sort of what that is, right? That's the job
ridiculous.
To be when you're a politician.
Yeah. So ridiculous.
Depends on what kind of politician you think you are.
Right.
In the beginning, it was looking to me like the kind of politician he thought he was more towards the dictator model I didn't want to say Mussolini, so I said more towards the dictator model where one person calls the shots. And now he's finding out that that isn't exactly the way it works. And frankly, I'm delighted that some people have some guts.
The aide said that the president actually meant what he said a couple of weeks ago. Who knew this would be so hard? All right. Daisy writes, but if they keep the bill but don't defend the mandate, the ACA will still collapse. That was your point, Mike. And then they can blame the ACA. But if they pass their horrible bill and millions lose coverage, we can take back the House, Senate, and presidency and get a single-payer plan. A girl can dream.
Yeah, but in the meantime, a lot of people will suffer.
Absolutely.
No, terrible.
Heather says, I'm curious what your thoughts are on the likelihood that impeachment proceedings would ever move forward with the Republicans in power if compelling evidence is found related to collusion. Seems like Nunes, which we'll talk about the story a little bit later, will never truly conduct an investigation that will move forward whether there is convincing evidence or not. Thoughts? Well, she may have
it's
answered her own
the
question
polls.
There, right?
Right. It's all in the polls. If the polls are showing this guy to be, you know, terrible, and having committed, you know, some kind of treason with the Russians. And by the way, I think there are a lot of shoes that are going to still drop in that area. It was interesting to me that the Democrats are now sort of backing off the idea that there should be a grand jury right away, because this issue is going to be around for a long time. And I think it would be premature as the FBI does its investigations and the rest. If this stuff comes out, and it's really bad, I think you're going to see all kinds of Republicans running for the hills because they know that they're going to get wiped out if this goes forward.
Latest poll, I believe CBS is reporting that the Quinnipiac survey that came out overnight found 37% approval rating for Donald Trump, 56% disapprove, and the poll is also showing that the support that he had, rather strong support among GOP voters, is where it's slipping, where it's going down.
And I wanted to ask, sorry to be hoarse, how does that correlate with his base? So that really low approval rating, does that begin to encompass some of the people who were in his base?
Evidently, even, I mean, Republicans were 89-88% in favor of him, even though his general support was in the 40s. Now, that's in the low 80s, which shows it's declining. I mean, it's measurable. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean they've abandoned him, but
right.
it shows that it's eroding there, too.
Mm-hmm.
No, but I think Barbara makes a very good point, because that base, which was around 40%, maybe 38% now, but it's still sticking with him.
Let's take a break because we are about 2 minutes late. So let's take a break. We'll come back. I do want to talk about other subjects, and we will get to those and more of your letters after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us on this Friday morning. Yes.
Joe, I wanted to issue two rare personal apologies.
All right.
One was to my wife, Roselle, who hearing the television on the radio and not me, phoned from upstairs to tell me, get on the show. And she has written me a letter that holds me somewhat responsible for that. And then secondly, I wanted to thank Rob, our wonderful engineer, who has done such a superb job of picking this music. I believe that was Django Reinhardt we just heard. It never stops. This guy surprises us every day with his eclectic choice in music, and he is to be celebrated. I really think so.
Yeah, Lonnie Johnson apparently is who that was.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, that's all right.
Another apology.
But Rob is still great.
I knew there was another apology coming.
But Rob is still great. All right, let's go on to some other topics and find out what other things we can talk about. So what do you all make of the Democrats' plan to filibuster the Gorsuch nomination? The Senate Democrats on Thursday vowed to filibuster the nomination of Neil Gorsuch, signaling an imminent partisan showdown over the nominee's fate and future of the century-old rules in the chamber. Is this a good idea? Alan?
Yes. It's a very good idea. I'll tell you why. The Democrats are seen at this stage of the game as somewhat feckless. And Chuck Schumer, who I have tremendous faith in and think is a wonderful guy, has decided, obviously, that the downside of this, which is clearly that they will, the Republicans will impose the nuclear option, right, and make it a 50 vote as opposed to 60 vote thing, which they've done now with the lower courts already, that it's not worth worrying about that. The thing to do here is to make the point and to do the filibuster in reaction to what happened to the Democrats' choice in all of this. So from my point of view, he's doing the right thing. It banks up the troops. It fortifies the point, and he'll get a lot of credit for it.
Won't they say, well, look what, you know, we want to pass someone who is seemed to be at least qualified, fairly mainstream for the job. He has the support, and this is just gumming up the works and impeding the process.
I don't think we can underestimate. I don't think we can underestimate how truly right wing he is. I don't think he answered questions directly. People know probably just as little about him today as they did 3 or 4 days ago when this all started. And one of the things that I have been looking at is the report from the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, who absolutely oppose his confirmation for many reasons. But I think he will be dangerous to civil rights, to women's rights, to LGBT rights, to voting rights. I mean, I just think anything they can do to register their disapproval, I think I support.
Mike? Well, I think it's risky. I hear everything you're saying, Barbara. I mean, that's still because he has been careful not to reveal all of his personal beliefs, and we only get hints and we can extrapolate on that. It's risky in that if the Democrats are successful in knocking it down, will they have the strength to knock the next one down?
Right.
And that guy might be, or that person, whoever, probably
likely a
probably
guy.
Likely
a guy.
you and I agree there. probably a more conservative person, and maybe even more an ideologue. And they've just spent a lot of capital to defeat it. I mean, the next opening is the one, you know, should Gorsuch get through the process and join the Supreme Court, the next person, that could really tip things.
Yes.
And maybe that's where the Democrats really need to build a coalition. They might be able to win some favor now by not stopping this and then gaining some moderate Republican support to make sure the next one is not a really right-wing ideologue.
I understand.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Alan?
To which I say, you want to bet?
Yeah.
Next
okay.
One that,
you don't think it will win support?
You know,
if they were to go along with
no,
it.
No. Right. You know, if you get on your bended knee, that's never helped guys like this. And it's never helped the coalition that is really running this country, at least temporarily, right now. The next one is going to be horrible. I think that it has to be seen that if we oppose this, meaning the people who are being in opposition, if we oppose this, he's going to get through, by the way, guys. I have no doubt about that. He's going to make it. But they're going to make him sweat for it, which is the right thing to do. And as far as do we know, Barbara, what he's really all about, we absolutely know what he's about. All you have to do is look at all of the past opinions and hold it up. We know what he is. We know what he's going to do. But I think the Democrats are right to put a stumbling block here to say we are not going to be patsies.
So where does it go from here? Obviously, we then go to the nuclear option. If we look at this, we sort of know how it's going to work out, right? We just have to let it play out.
Sure.
Right. But there's even some question because one senator's in the hospital with back surgery and unable to vote. If they have to do that in the next 2 weeks, they may there may be a couple of people opposed to the nuclear option, so to speak, where they would only need 51 votes or 50 votes, actually, to get him on the bench and on the Supreme Court bench. So if that fails, that's another big blow for the Republicans. And you're right, Alan. I mean, if the Democrats are able to ever stop this or make it really difficult for the Republicans, it rallies them. They haven't had much profile lately.
You know, I mean, it's so. Wasn't there a movie? Wasn't that a movie when they brought the guy in on the door plank to vote at the in the United States Senate? Was it back in Lincoln's time, at the last minute to save the day? Hooray! Hooray!
Hooray! Well, they have brought people in on stretchers to vote. They have actually. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Ted Kennedy.
You know,
was
I know.
Frail
yeah, well,
there's
a movie about that issue. Yeah, right.
American health or the Obamacare, what, you know, Affordable Care Act.
We got some letters that'll bring us up to the top of the hour in news. Andrew said, I'm happy that Alan has progressed to the term so-called moderate in describing John Faso this morning. Yesterday, in his great interview with Yancey Roy, Alan was still calling Faso a moderate, which he is not.
No. I have never, ever said the guy's a moderate. What I have said is he is described as a moderate when you compare him to the other Republicans in the party. I wish, no, come on, Alan, don't do this. Don't say I wish people would stop lying, because that's not right. But I just have no idea where this idea has come from that I think that John Faso is a moderate. He isn't. He votes with the Republicans, and he does the Republican talking points. He has a piece in the Post, I think, this morning, an opinion piece, which identifies himself. So stop making stuff up, folks, okay?
Bruce writes, I wonder if we're seeing a precursor to future budget discussions, the Freedom Caucus demanding cuts that are simply deal breakers to negotiations. Thoughts on that? Seems possible, doesn't it?
Plausible.
Say it again.
That the idea that this, that the, when you look at the Freedom Caucus and what they're doing in this vote, that it could, we could see a similar, he calls it a precursor, to deal breakers in negotiation regarding the budget.
Sure, they're flexing their muscle, and if they get through, if they're able to block this vote, you know, and it doesn't go through this, you know, like it looks like it's not going to at this point, they will have tremendous clout. They have looked, as Alan, I think you said it, they have looked at Trump in the eye and he blinked. And that gives them enormous clout going into all the budget stuff. So it's the Koch brothers prevail.
Exactly. He has the Koch brothers. You know, in this political system where money talks and all others walk, that is, I think, what is really on the table here. We had at least one letter saying, well, why are the Koch brothers doing this? You know, I'm not fully sure, to be honest with you. I don't think they like Trump to begin with, and I think that's part of the deal. Their brand of conservatism is nothing's good enough.
I think we have time for one more letter, and then we'll get to the news, which is Judith writes, it is ethically wrong and not in keeping with our democratic process to alter a major congressional bill the night before it will be voted on. Why has NPR not publicized that the loss of funding to Planned Parenthood is part of the bill? I think they have made that point. I've heard at least two stories on that.
Yeah, and even WAMC has done a lot on that. Didn't Ian Pickus elicit from John Faso a few weeks ago a commitment not to support the health care bill if it was going to defund Planned Parenthood, and now he is supporting it. That's why a lot of people are angry at him. But it's in there, the defunding of Planned Parenthood.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll pause, and we will be back with the with our last half hour of discussion on the issues of the day. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion. We have Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Barbara Smith, and of course your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. And we welcome your letters. Mike Spain had an interesting story regarding what is going on here in New York State about a state senator that this ultimately could have some impact on the balance of the New York State Senate.
That's right. A senator from Niagara County, Robert Ort, has been indicted in Albany County, and it relates to a alleged no-show job that he arranged for his wife back in Niagara County when he was running for the mayor of the city of North Tonawanda. But it does, it's a blemish. It didn't happen while he was a state senator, allegedly. I mean, this whole thing. He denies it, by the way. He says that the hiring of his wife, who's a graphic artist, by a public relations firm was completely legitimate. The state attorney general, Schneiderman's office, had brought the charges and secured the indictment. And he's claiming, Eric Schneiderman is contending that it was because she didn't do any work, and it was really just to close a gap in his salary when politicians wanted him to run for the mayor and he was making more money in his previous job, and this is all catching up to him. He's a very popular lawmaker. He's a Afghanistan Army veteran, you know, served in Afghanistan, and he's going to fight this one. The question is whether it might affect him now. And John Flanagan, who's the Senate Majority Leader, the Republican leader, wants him to stay there and be part of it because it's a very close majority that the Republicans have, and they're only able to wield power because there's a breakaway group of Democrats that work with the Republicans. And if it gets too close, that breakaway group might run back to the Democrats, and that's happened before. And meantime, a former senator from Western New York has also been charged in Albany County in a separate kind of a matter, but it's George Mazarez. He's no longer a state senator. In fact, I think Ort had replaced him. And that has to do with covering up a payment to a staffer who left, and there's allegations of sexual harassment, and he also denies those charges. But that's happening here in Albany, and it's just another blemish on our state legislature and another cloud over, you know, the process that goes on here in Albany.
Alan?
Well, I have to tell you, I'm thoroughly disgusted with the New York State Legislature, have been for years. It seems like they are the ultimate practitioners of the oldest profession. They don't seem to care a lot about anything except the acquisition and maintenance of political power, which they have been expert at. You have a group of Democrats. You have Rich Klein from is Klein's first name? Rich?
Jeff
anyway,
Klein.
From the Bronx. What'd you say?
Jeff Klein.
What was the name?
Yeah,
Jeff Klein. I'm so sorry.
Jeffrey Klein.
Jeff Klein from Jeff Klein from the Bronx, who is just deplorable. Bringing his people to support the Republican agenda among some very important things. And Governor Cuomo, who I have to say has been nothing but nice to those guys who have kept the balance of power in the Republican camp. Because if he really cared, he would say, get back where you belong. Otherwise, I'm going to go into your district and call you out for the faux Democrats you really are. Can you imagine Jeff Klein from the Bronx supporting the Republican agenda basically by propping them up? And of course, that's why the Republicans are so worried about this latest indictment, because you take one more down and you really are getting very close. And so he says, well, you know, just an accusation. And in the meantime, I'm going to be for him and be welcoming him back here because he's so important to us. It's disgusting.
We want to let's go on to some other stories that are making news. I want to talk about because we talked about this yesterday, and that is the story regarding the wiretapping. We mentioned Representative Nunes and his comments yesterday. He has now apologized, and what he's apologized for is disclosing surveillance information to the White House and his handling of the revelations about surveillance. According to the other Democrats, they say that his apology was generic. But behind closed doors, he did say that he did not handle it properly. He came under heavy fire from Democrats after going first to the press, then to the White House, and then to the press again before consulting with committee colleagues about what he said was fresh intelligence about the president and his campaign aides. This all stemming from Donald Trump's tweet that his phones were wiretapped at Trump Tower by the former president of the United States, Barack Obama. And according to Jim Hines, a representative from the state of Connecticut, when he made his apology, he stressed that he really wanted us to be bipartisan. He was contrite internally on the committee. He's a very reasonable guy, but outside on a number of occasions, he's acted in the interests of the Trump campaign. Alan.
Says it all?
Yeah.
It says it all. First of all, I think, you know, it's always convenient to apologize when you're dead wrong and you get caught. And that's exactly what happened. He was dead wrong. He got caught. And, you know, I thought that the Democrats on the committee were forceful and made the point, got on CNN right in the beginning, made the point again and again that this was improper. This wasn't what should have happened. So the last thing they want is an independent prosecutor or a commission. So he goes back to apologize to his committee and says, OK, we'll try harder the next time, thereby staving off the impetus for a truly independent prosecutor or independent commission.
Which Adam Schiff is still calling for, saying he has grave concerns about their ability to conduct a credible investigation and is still calling for that. But obviously the numbers are against him in that regard. So it will still be tough. Won't
right.
It? Yeah.
Yeah, John McCain yesterday said that this is furthers the argument for an independent select committee, so to speak, to take up the issue of Russian connections to the Trump campaign and whether there was any or how to what extent they participated in the government. So therefore, you know, it pushes that. In the meantime, Trump is using what Nunes has told him, and that there might be that he has seen some documentation of some peripheral investigation or eavesdropping that was going on between some people who might not even be U.S. citizens that somehow had a connection to the Trump campaign as being the equivalent of Obama ordering Trump wiretapped. You know, I mean, it's a reach, but Trump is using that to say he's been vindicated, which I guess
or is partially, he said, partially vindicated.
Right.
That's what's so interesting about this. He didn't even say he'd been vindicated when they caught him in the White House. You know, he used this word partially. I believe it was partially, right? The main thing about an independent, what McCain's call for a committee, a select committee, the main thing that has to happen if you have a select committee is that you have equal number of Democrats and Republicans. Otherwise, you're going to have the same thing that's playing out here in the Intelligence Committee, you know, where the Republicans just give lip service, they apologize, but they continue on their merry way.
Let me go to a couple of letters. Joshua says it's a bad move. This is about the filibuster. It is a bad move. The Dems will lose on Gorsuch in the end. There is no doubt about that. They need to pick and choose their battles. This is not an issue that motivates the segments of the base where Dems need increased turnout. They shouldn't waste the political capital. Betsy writes, anything to make our voices heard. This is, again, about the filibuster. Anything they can do to slow down the process of confirmation. By the way, I think Gorsuch is the worst. A wolf in sheep's clothing who, unfortunately, has no introspective urge. Who would vote against those who are just trying to live of all things in this country? I don't exactly know what seems to be a word missing there. But anyway. All right. Let's go on to another topic. Let's go to the tougher visa screening. This announced yesterday, the Trump administration has ordered tougher screening of visa applicants. They are making it tougher for millions of visitors to enter the United States by demanding new security checks before giving visas to tourists, business travelers, and relatives of American residents. Diplomatic cable sent last week from the Secretary of State Rex Tillerson to all American embassies instructed consular offices to broadly increase scrutiny. It was the first evidence of the extreme vetting Mr. Trump promised during the presidential campaigns. The new rules generally do not apply to citizens of 38 countries, including most of Europe and longstanding allies like Australia, New Zealand, Japan, and South Korea, who can be speedily admitted into the United States under the Visa Waiver Program. That program does not cover citizens from any country in the Middle East or Africa.
Can you say xenophobia? It's just so...
Well, one way or another, Sorry, go ahead, Barbara.
No, I was just saying it's really blatant that there's certain people who are favored and who are considered to be our friends most of the time, and then there are other people who are never our friends all of the time.
No, it seems like it's... Well, it seems like it.
Yeah. So I think what's going to happen here is one way or the other, he's going to keep people out. Oh, he may do it by having Tillerson call the embassies. He may do it by passing administrative orders of one kind or another. But in the end, the wink-wink, signal-signal is there, and they're going to keep people out. What I'm fascinated about is how, in at least a few of these cases, it has been the children of the immigrants who are now grown who have committed these acts of terrorism. And that is fascinating. It does seem to be the elephant on the table that not an awful lot of people are talking about.
And I just want to point our listeners to what happened in New York a couple of days ago. This white man who hated black people and hated black men who stabbed to death a black man who he did not know simply because he was black. And there's an article in the New York Times that I haven't had a chance to read. I think it's more of a commentary. Another murderer crazed by color, this time met by silence. It happened in New York City. So how do we keep those people where they belong?
Well, what do you mean met by silence, Barbara?
I don't know what the article is saying.
I certainly knew about it, and I read about it in four or five different places. It's never enough, of course. You're right about that. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it isn't as if it's been purposely covered up, because it hasn't been.
I'm not sure what the writer, as I said, I haven't read this. I just found this article. I don't know what the point or his thesis is, but that's the title of the article in the New York Times. It's in a column that's called About New York. It's by Jim Dwyer. So
the Jim Dwyer column today. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just getting back to the other aspect of this, I didn't realize until I read that story that the State Department issues 10 million visas a year.
I didn't either.
That was an astounding number. And if the new Trump budget is going to cut the State Department budget by 30%, this will happen. You know, it'll achieve its goal. They won't be able to process all these visas. And if they are going to favor certain places, which we already officially do, the ones that you named, it's going to have an adverse effect on countries where people are coming, Middle Eastern countries where people are coming who predominantly Islamic countries, and it will have that effect de facto. So whether it's policy or whether it's just defunding, it's going to happen.
Alan, I've read a little bit further into the article. Now comes a matter of a purported white supremacist who prosecutors say not only used a sword to slaughter an innocent man, but had plans to kill more in Times Square. The usual suspects on matters of terrorism have not been rushing to condemn this week's murder of Mr. Kaufman. President Trump has not yet said anything about this horrific crime. Figuring out which politicians are more virtuous based on the speed of their denunciations of heinous acts is a fool's game. Nothing is repaired by pious news releases or rants on cable television and social media. Still, the sharp sensitivity of the president to any crime charged to an immigrant is striking when compared with his seeming indifference to attacks on minorities or his own verbal forays.
All good points.
I want to, we have about 3 or 4 minutes. There was a story that is brewing in the art world, and I thought it was worthy of talking about. The Whitney Biennial is taking place This has newly opened, and there is a great deal of protest that is coming from a painting that from 2016 that is being shown in this exhibit. It's I read from the New York Times, the open coffin photographs of the mutilated body of Emmett Till, the teenager who was lynched by two white men in Mississippi in 1955, served as a catalyst for the civil rights movement and have remained an open wound in American society since they were first published in Jet magazine and the Chicago Defender at the urging of Till's mother. The images continuing power more than 60 years later to speak about race and violence is being demonstrated once again in protests that have arisen online and at the newly opened Whitney Biennial over the decision of a white artist, Dana Schutz, to make a painting based on the photographs. An African-American artist, Parker Bright, has conducted peaceful protests in front of the painting since Friday, positioning himself sometimes with a few other protesters in front of the work to partly block its view. He's engaged museum visitors in discussions about the painting while wearing a T-shirt with the words Black Death Spectacle on the back. Another protester, Hannah Black, a British-born black artist and writer working in Berlin, has written a letter to the curators of the exhibit, urging that the painting not only be removed from the show, but also destroyed. The subject matter is not Schutz's, according to Hannah Black. She wrote in a Facebook message that has been signed by more than 30 other artists that she identifies as non-white. White free speech and white creative freedom have been founded on the constraint of others and are not natural rights. The painting must go.
So here we are again. One of the things that I would highly suggest if people think they have the stamina to do this is to look at the photograph. And it's really important to understand
the original photograph.
The photograph of Emmett Till in his coffin, mangled. It's a horrible, horrible, horrible image that his mother, he was her only child. His mother insisted that there be an open coffin funeral for her baby because she wanted the entire world to know what had been done to him. And Jet Magazine, one of our black, you know, publications, published it. It was published, I think, in the Chicago Defender, too. That photograph went around the world. Some people mark the Emmett Till case as the beginning of the modern civil rights struggle in this nation, which I think is it's quite arguable because one of his family members actually testified about what had occurred and then had to be removed quickly from the state of Mississippi so that he himself would not be hurt or killed. His uncle, I believe, said what had happened that night. But I don't understand why you would paint a painting of an atrocity. I just don't understand. And if his mother were alive, I can't imagine the amount of pain and agony it would cause her to think that a white woman artist who was just dealing with it as a thought process or, you know, a concept, that she would indeed see fit to make a painting of the most horrible, horrible thing that could ever happen. Now, the artist herself says that, you know, she felt empathy as a mother for this. My engagement with the image was through empathy with his mother. There are other paintings one might have done to show that.
Does it? We're out of time, but also the other question.
Why would we have pictures then, Barbara, of Jesus on the cross, bleeding and everything else? I mean, you know, I think what's missing from the analysis here. I understand all your points, but what's missing from the analysis is why we think what her motives were. We don't know what her motives were. A white person who empathizes with the Till case and wants to give it even more impact, I'm not so sure I get it. Maybe I need more education.
Well, and I also have there's the difference between, I mean, I think there's many things. We could go after the artist. You could go after the museum for showing it. But you can also, but then that idea of then calling for it to be destroyed seems...
I don't think it's up to the museum to destroy it. I think it should be taken down and returned to the artist. She said she's not going to sell it. She'll not make money from it. But the thing is that I think that people don't understand what it feels like to be constantly re-traumatized in this country as a black American because of racial violence and hatred. So that's why I have problems with it. She was re-traumatizing a certain segment of people.
Right.
No, I think your insights as an African-American woman is important for us to hear, because I tend to see it the way Alan does, that this is happens to be a white artist but is doing essentially what Emmett Till's mother did, using the horrific image to amplify what the black struggle has been. But I hear what you're saying, and it's I think we have to take that into consideration, too. You regard it as an insult.
Yeah, it's treading. I mean, I don't know. What would one, and maybe this is a wrong analogy, what would one think about Holocaust art showing the incredible suffering?
Right.
A ton of Holocaust art. There's a ton of Holocaust art which shows incredible suffering. We have some of it in our home. So, I mean, but it certainly is there. It certainly makes the point, and it's never forget.
Who is it painted by, or who is it created by?
Now you got me, Barbara.
Yeah, I sometimes think it might be time also. Maybe it's too soon.
Well, the other thing too here is that you have an image, and I just say this as clarification because we're talking about an image on radio, but it is a very abstract image, so the painting is I don't know. Let's put it this way, and I apologize if I offend any art scholars in our audience, but I think if you just took it completely out of context and looked at it, I don't know that you would see this is Emmett Till in a
right.
in a coffin.
Absolutely, you wouldn't.
Right. So, okay, we are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Thanks to our panel. Alan, have a great weekend. Thank you very much.
Okay, gang, you too.
Be well. Mike, thank you. Barbara, thanks as always. And we'll be back with more Roundtable after this.